Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%. APR, 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Kusu Chuang and Tan Chung Han. And also on the line, we have Ben LeBron. He's the market analyst with Options Express in Sydney.
Ben, good morning. Now, of course, oil prices have cratered in the last few days, I think, down 22% since their January highs, about $42 a barrel. Is it too simplistic to say that the U.S. shale production is the biggest reason why prices are floundering?
It's certainly one reason, that rise in shale output and the Baker Hughes rig count that we see. Release those statistics haven't helped, and of course inventories on the rise in the US as well, but it obviously coincides with ineffectual OPEC policy and a lot of speculation that OPEC is not working together, and of course there's ramifications for, you know, the effects in terms of inflation, low levels of inflation across the globe, global growth that affects the share market, and I guess lenders to any of those sort of oil players that become less, well, teeter on the brink with oil prices so low. So I would suspect if it moved into the 30s, then obviously naturally as a byproduct would see some of that U.S. oil shale or some of that U.S. shale start to dissipate a little bit, because a lot of them are unprofitable the lower the oil price goes, obviously, and that initially was the game that OPEC was playing against those shale producers, was to keep oil prices low and see them go out of business and then turn on the taps again. But as I said, OPEC just doesn't seem to be getting their act together, and that is the other side of the story that is creating this global glut.
Your outlook, what's about your outlook terms, Ben? What are the oil futures pointing at in terms of price levels?
Well, nothing spectacular, that's for sure. I mean, off-session lows last night would be the nicest compliment you could probably give the oil price last night, but nothing significant and right at the bottom end of that trading range at this stage. Obviously, you know, from about, I'm using Sydney time here, it was released about midnight last night, those inventory numbers out of the US, and, you know, back down the elevator shaft we came. As I said, off-session lows, but, you know, we're really clutching at straws if we're going to start paying the oil market a compliment just because it's off-session lows.
And still on energy markets, you would have seen last night the ascension of the 31-year-old Deputy Crown Prince and Defence Minister, Mohammed bin Salman, from the Saudi family. Now, he's in charge. Now, he's obviously got him now in charge of the oil energy's strategy for the Saudis. What do you think he's going to do? And do you think he's going to shake up the public, the order of oil strategy for the Saudi family, especially in light of the upcoming Aramco listing?
Well, yeah, Aramco is crucial. Saudi definitely needs higher oil prices to make that IPO work in 2018. As for the new Crown Prince, I mean, I don't know too much about him. I know he's got a, you know, heavy agenda or a very busy schedule. Hostilities with Iran, you know, plus a war in Yemen, and the low oil price. So, will he implement new policies? I guess no one really knows. Those closest to him might have might know. All we've got in the market at the moment is speculation about what he may or may not do. But we do know, and you're right to flag Aramco again, that the oil markets, they really do need to see a significant rally off lows at the moment.
Well, what also happened overnight was the inclusion of Chinese Shenhua, well, the Chinese stocks, into the MSCI index of stocks. What were your initial impressions of the reaction of markets to that move?
I wasn't surprised. I don't think the market was particularly surprised. Going to the emerging markets benchmark, it's been a long campaign to get global acceptance. The government has moved through a number of reforms to open up their capital markets. I think it was all largely priced in. Great headlines, but something that the market had been talking about for quite some time.
Where do you sit on this whole long-running debate, Ben, in terms of whether and how to introduce, you know, domestic Chinese securities into international portfolios? Should they even be introduced?
Well, I don't know whether they should be introduced. I mean, this is the first step, and obviously the Chinese would like to see some further measures introduced moving forward. They've got 222 shares now that you can trade there, these A shares. I don't know, some of the lesser names and some of those valuations that they trade at, you know, my mind harkens back to 12, 18 months ago. I just saw complete danger signs. And they move, I mean, you know, like all global markets, they move on policies that are being introduced by the government, but then the government can step in and support share prices as well. So, you know, a lot of me just thinks it's a market that needs to mature a little bit before we can get further exposure.
Well, size-wise, Ben, the Chinese equity markets and the bond markets are number two and number three in the world, at least on overt terms. Yet only 2% of those securities are held by international portfolios. Do you think this imbalance would be redressed by the inclusion?
Yeah, I think it will. Slowly but surely, it'll be a sort of drip feed. It'll be akin to being drip fed, basically. But you're right. I mean, you know, something so large does deserve to hold further weighting in portfolios. But I mean, accounting practices and measures. I mean, there's just a lot of things that more sophisticated, investors in the developed world don't have a full understanding or a full handle on. But the more that changes out of China, I think the more likely there is for international portfolios to get some exposure there, especially considering the weighting and the size of it, as you mentioned.
And Ben, real quick, a couple more minutes. Just your quick view on Travis Kalanick's resignation from the Uber board as CEO. What does this mean, less for Uber, but more for the unicorns? I mean, biggest unicorn of unicorns at $69 billion valuation, Uber. What's that going to do for the whole unicorn phenomenon in the US?
I'm not sure what ramifications it's going to have for other stocks. I mean, in terms of what it means for Uber, well, you know, I think that the CEO has made probably the right decision there. You don't want to be at loggerheads with your significant or your major shareholders. And I think in his own words, he said that they don't need another fight. And of course, you know, it's a company undergoing a lot of litigation, a lot of lawsuits levelled against the company. So they've been sort of bogged down in the quagmire of those kind of things. So, you know, some fresh leadership, some fresh eyes, a new approach. That's what some of the major shareholders of Uber were looking for. And I guess, you know, well, that's certainly what they've got. I guess, you know, it's going to be interesting just to see what the new man or woman in charge actually has by way of a fresh insight and a new approach. But, you know, we've got a similar stock here in Australia. BHP, the largest miner in Australia, at loggerheads with their largest shareholder, and it's not ideal and just keeps share prices depressed, which is, no one wants to see.
All righty, Ben. Thanks so much for your time. That was Ben Lebrun, market analyst for Options Express out of Sydney, Australia.
A fascinating discussion, especially with the woman possibility taking over at Uber.
I like the fact that you picked up on that one word.
That's, yeah, but you know, Travis Kalanick. Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary. Every time you take your company that
he's
you built,
like Donald
your
Trump,
baby, public, you lose control. I mean, this has happened to others.
Well, he's
right?
Not public yet. I mean, his off market pre market valuation is $69 billion. That's bigger than many Asian corporations, and they haven't even hit public markets yet. But the fact is, he's left the board, he's resigned as CEO because of all this attrition.
Because of shareholders.
Well, yeah, because of all these PR debacles that's been happening in the last few months, all from obviously sexism remarks and, you know, alcohol at parties and, you know,
alcohol at parties? That is a crime.
Well, excessive, a la Wolf of Wall Street. So,
we'll be back with more business news after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%, APR 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.